From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Adeline Baxter with this news. The Juneau-based crew of a medevac plane went missing this week, and the news hit the medical evacuation community in Alaska particularly hard. Pilot Patrick Coyle, paramedic Margaret Langston, and nurse Stacy Ray Morse took off from Anchorage Tuesday to pick up a patient in need of medical evacuation in Cake. But the plane never arrived. Friends and family have planned a candlelight remembrance in Juneau for 6 p.m. Friday, according to Guardian flight pilot Eric Magnuson. Magnuson is a colleague of the missing crew members and has worked with medical evacuation companies out of Juneau for more than 20 years. He says he's never lost a colleague in his career.
It's a job I love. It's a job I'm very passionate about. I'm glad to be doing it, and I sense that same passion in my coworkers.
Magnuson says this week's events have been stressful for everyone at Guardian Flight. Crews remain grounded across the state as the company gives employees time to process grief.
We know that we've all been distracted and are, you know, experiencing a lot of grief over this, the loss of our coworkers. And so we are determined to plan through and talk through how to get individuals back on the job, but allow them to take their time to grieve and not come back distracted.
Magnuson says he and his colleagues are working to get their operations back online and get back to doing the work they love soon. The U.S. Forest Service is allowing more planning time for a series of controversial timber sales that could take place on Prince of Wales Island. The agency worked on the project during the partial government shutdown, which drew sharp criticism from environmental groups. A public meeting was announced and then canceled within the same week in January. Now the Forest Service has rescheduled that meeting for February 20th in Klawak. Buck Lindekugal from the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council opposes future logging on these lands, but he's pleased the Forest Service is taking longer to consider his objections.
They should have extended it, and they shouldn't have been doing this when the government was shut down the first time.
An email from the regional forester says that February meeting date is firm, even if another government shutdown happens again. A museum in Haines was closed for several days due to safety concerns about an antique mortar in its inventory. An explosives team from the U.S. Army removed the device from the museum on Thursday and detonated it in a remote location. KHNS's Henry Leisha has more.
Haines Sheldon Museum Director Helen Alton said that the World War II era mortar was made for the Japanese Army.
It looks like a torpedo, kind of a teardrop shape with wings on the end. It's about probably about 16, 20 inches long, and then 81 millimeters is the diameter. It's kind of heavy. We handled it quite a bit.
According to Alton, it was donated to the museum by a late Haines resident who had a collection of items from World War II that he used for history talks.
His uncle was in the Pacific Theater and he was in the European Theater at the same time, and so this was part of his uncle's collecting.
When museum staff carried out a review of its inventory last year, the mortar was identified as an item that may not fit with the museum's mission to preserve the history of the Chilkat Valley. Alton said that staff examined the object at a recent meeting. They were trying to find out more information about its origins.
We didn't have any paperwork that said it had been deactivated. We had no good documentation. And so we were trying to figure out how would we determine that. And so we called the police to find out what they would know.
Haines Dispatch received the call about the mortar on January 25th. When Haines police officer Chris Brown went to the museum to examine the explosive, he was unable to determine whether it posed a safety risk. So images of the mortar were sent to the 716th Explosive Ordnance Disposal Company out of Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage. The unit is tasked with responding to unexploded military munitions found in communities throughout Alaska. It advised the police department to close the museum to the public and staff. Captain Brandon Browning of the 716th EOD said that further assessment of the mortar was required.
From the pictures we received, it seemed possible that it could be a legitimate Japanese piece of ordnance from World War II. So it's just always best to treat something as worst-case scenario. And so if it looks real, it's best to treat it as real and the precautions that go along with it.
A team of six soldiers arrived in Haines by helicopter on Thursday. Around noon, three members of the 716th EOD entered the museum to assess the mortar. Alton said the team reported that the device did, in fact, pose a safety risk.
They spent quite a bit of time in there. They did x-rays and they weighed it. Somebody did try to empty it, but it isn't low enough in weight for it to be completely empty, and they found a haze in the pictures that suggests that there's still some explosive in there.
The team of soldiers decided the safest option was to dispose of the device by detonating it. According to Haynesboro Police Chief Heath Scott, the mortar was transported to a gravel pit along the Haynes Highway and detonated using C4. This isn't the first time that an old explosive has been unearthed in Haynes. In 2007, a tourist discovered an unexploded grenade near the Port Chilkoot dock. 4 years later, a mortar was discovered during a cleanup of the same area. The explosives were left over from military preparations at Fort Seward during World War II. Ironically, the Haynes Sheldon Museum was scheduled to open a new exhibit on Friday, commemorating the 75th anniversary of the Battle of Awtoo, the only ground battle of World War II to take place on American soil. Alton said it is a shame the mortar couldn't be used for the exhibit.
You know, if it was empty, it would be great because it's really cool. I mean, it's a really interesting looking piece, but I don't think it's going to make it into an exhibit case, I'm afraid.
Museum staff were able to return to their offices Friday. In Haynes, I'm Henry Leisha.
And finally, there are very few products made in Alaska from lumber produced in state. That's despite an ongoing battle over how the Tongass National Forest should be managed. While timber sales have declined for decades, there are some new initiatives on the table now that could open up more logging. That doesn't matter much to one Sitka craftsman. He's content using dead old growth, and he makes his living creating bowls from the Tongass without cutting down living trees. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has the story.
Zach LaPerriere has heard some surprising comments about the wooden bowls he sells at markets. People reach out to touch them, admiring the detail of an exposed scar and the smooth curves.
Some would say even sensual. That's up to the individual.
Sensual?
Well, they're not my words. I'm just repeating. I think I've heard even more racy words than that. Microphone might get some shit on it.
LaPerriere makes his bowls in an open-air workshop below his cabin overlooking the water. Before his creations made customers blush, he worked as a carpenter. But he says those skills didn't necessarily translate when he took up professional wood turning 5 years ago.
It really took me about a year to become even mildly proficient.
For starters, the wood, in this case, a gnarly chunk of alder, is spinning. As he shapes the bowl with the sharp tool, LaPerriere has to think in three dimensions. He spots a scar that looks like a pair of lips, and ribbons of the alder go flying.
I have to walk that line between being efficient and being creative.
In Southeast Alaska, not many people do this kind of work for a living. There are plenty of hobbyists, but LaPerriere is spending 1,000 hours a year creating wooden bowls. He helps support a family of five this way. Though one of his bowls can fetch up to $1,500, he admits it's not always a lucrative business. Still, LaPerriere says taking this huge career leap aligned with his values. He wanted to show people what's inside the trees from the nation's largest national forest and help translate that story.
Being deeply in love with our rainforest here, I want to understand what's going on in the trees. So I look for whatever's most unique. I mean, it might be a scar. It might be ambrosia beetles.
Beetles that leave tiny black holes in the tree. Those are the kind of imperfections LaPerriere wants to highlight when he's turning a piece of wood. He's found bullet holes, axe marks from the turn of the century, and one of his favorites, buck rubs. That's the antler markings of a deer looking for a mate.
I mean, hunters are always looking for buck rubs. So to see a buck rub from 20, 30, 40 years ago, that's a pretty exciting thing.
Especially spotting it as you dig into a salad bowl. So the characteristics of the trees vary wildly. But there's a type of wood LaPerriere says he wouldn't consider using.
There's no need to cut a living tree.
All of the wood piled up in his workshop comes from dead and down trees, which LaPerriere scavenges off the beach or hauls out of the forest himself. He has to go through a permitting process to be able to do that on national land. Today, there's less large-scale industrial logging happening in the Tongass. However, recent changes at the federal level could open up new sites. And that doesn't sit well with LaPerriere.
I would liken it to selling your furniture to make your credit card payment.
Instead, he imagines a future where fewer trees are harvested from the national land, and the old growth that is cut down is made into things produced in-state, things people want to buy and cherish. That was also identified as a priority by a former Tongass Advisory Committee, which included timber industry representatives. Even so, Le Perrier recognizes creating wooden bowls like his isn't the boost to the region's economy the state is looking for. After all, he's just one guy. But he thinks there's something to the model.
You know, I mean, I'm a logger now, and I feel great about that because it's something I can believe in. So I just write the date on the rim.
Back at his workshop, Le Perrier prepares his alder bowl for a long hibernation in the drying shed.
And where it came from.
He'll pull it back out in another 6 months or so to sand it and put on the finishing touches to get it ready to sell. He says he likes the idea of bringing beauty into people's lives with trees from the Tongass. Or, as some customers might see it, a little romance. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Sitka.
That's the latest from the KTOO Newsroom. I'm Adeline Baxter.